Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. Now we're going to talk about the Cubs and a little bit about the Bears with our old friend Tom Loxas. So, Tom, what are you going to call your podcast? Are you going to keep it the same name?
Yeah, because originally it was, when I did Bears and Beat Guys, it was, you know, just talking about whatever. And I used to actually had some pretty decent, you know, football guests as well as baseball. But, yeah, you know, this past year I did just the Cubs. But, you know, like we were just saying right now, the Cubs are a pretty lame, you know, to talk about.
Right.
They're not – yeah, they're not exciting to talk about. The Bears are the, you know, everybody wants to talk about that. And yeah, so I'll just, you know, have on whoever I can get. But yeah, I still keep like a tight rotation of guys that I like to have on all the time, like you or Evan Altman. And, you know, I like to mix it up a little bit.
Oh, so, I love to
be Bears and Beagles.
I love to be part of a tight rotation. Will Greg Gabriel be coming on your podcast?
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's your fault. I forgot I muted him.
And although, wait, he's probably going to need the money because he's going to lose his pension if the Bears drain Fields. I don't know if you saw that, but he put up his pension for the wager.
He's just the dumbest. Yeah, but I had forgot I muted him, and you pointed out, you messaged me like, hey, did you see what your buddy's up to? I'm like, what? And he's great. I had to go find him, and then I had to unmute him, and then I was like, oh, God. And it lasted about 2 days, and I just muted him again. It's painful. It's fun that he gets so mad. But he also never stops. It's just relentless. He'll just like, who is it he's been? He picked a big fight with Brad Spiegelberger from Pro Football Focus. And it's like, he literally retweeted back to him like 20 times. And you're like, all right, that's enough. Just go away, old man. Go down to the pool and see if any of the kids can jump out of it onto the deck. And then you could get the Bears to draft them in the third round like you did. What was that guy's name? Jerron Phillips? Was that his name?
I cannot remember his name, but I totally remember the video.
Well, I can always find the video. It's always just like one click away. It's just like you just type in like Bears jump out of pool, and you either get like an actual bear or you get this guy. And both equally impressive. And both equally important in football that you could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. God knows how many times you've seen the players on the Chiefs do that. Yeah, the other thing that's funny, though, about Greg is that, you know, Old Takes has really gotten a lot of run with him lately. I don't know if you can see, but they're really giving it to him. So I'm sure they'll be lining up if, you know, if the trade goes down with Fields soon.
Well, I want to talk to you about that. We'll save that for the end. We'll start with the very exciting Cubs. Do you think Jed knows the spring training starts in 8 days? Do you think –
they're
gonna like catch him
is...
by alert's gonna go off on his phone. He's gonna be like, "Oh shit, it's Valentine's Day already? Don't we have practice today?" Yeah, you do, Jed.
Yeah, the bus left already, didn't it?
Yeah, nothing more exciting than video of them loading boxes onto an Allied truck. Oh, spring's right around the corner, and then it hits different when it's like 45 degrees and sunny out. It's like, yeah, spring's kind of here. So
yeah,
congrats. Yeah. Oh, before we get to the talk about the players, though, I mean, the most important thing that happened this week is that people were all upset that Marquee is going to do the bulk of the spring training games remotely. I mean, come on, that's just not right. I mean, these how can you half-ass these super important pretend baseball games? Do you think we would, if they hadn't told us, do you think we would have noticed?
No, probably not.
No, probably not. And what it sounds like, then to me, the bad news wasn't that they were going to do the games remotely, because I don't care. I mean, they'll still have cameras there, and they'll just have a guy or two watching it on TV and telling us what they think happened, is that we're going to get more Alex Cohen and Zach Zaidman. I'm really excited about that. I have a feeling those two will actually be there. I think the remote thing is more for I think it's so Boot can do more games, and they can just, God forbid, I'm sure Cole Wright will do some, which will just, it'll be 3 hours of nicknames. But yeah, it was funny that there were people who were like, Crawley got all upset, which I thought was really funny. It's like, you're not really watching these, are you? I mean, it's nice to have it on, and you look over and you see, hey, it's sunny. And look at Pete Armstrong's weird haircut, you know. But otherwise, it's spring training. It's just kind of a thing. I was always of mind that, you know, they made a big deal of the fact they were going to show every game. And it's like, well, what else are you going to show? You know, your network. That's all you got. Of course, you're going to show every game. But I would try to think about how many I actually watch. I usually watch the first one, you know.
Yeah, because I remember.
And then, like I said, I'll have it on and I'll look over and I'll be like, "Oh God, let's see. Whoa, who just got hurt? why are they carrying Dansby off on? Is that a stretcher? Oh God, no. Season's over and it's March 12th.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, you'd always get so excited about the first game, you know, and then. It was a big deal. It was always on, you know, GN. And by the fifth inning, you'd be like, who the fuck are these guys?
Who's this? I'm bored. Yeah. And then they would only show like three or four. And then it was like a big deal there for a while when they would go to Vegas. You'd get two games in a weekend. But yeah. And then a few years ago, it's been more than a few years ago now, they started making Len do all the games on like Cubs.com. I was like, man, you got a terrible contract. Why are you having to do all these? You had Mick Gillespie doing all the spring training games on the website.
Wow.
So anyway, yeah, I mentioned that, you know, hopefully Jed remembers that spring training is coming and that it might be time to actually round out his, he doesn't have a lineup. I mean, he does, technically. They could, if there was a game tomorrow, they could field a team. But it wouldn't be very good.
No, I mean, it's funny. I mean, I definitely think he's just, you know, I think he feels like ball's in his court, and I feel like he's waiting, you know, Bellinger out. So I think in some ways, he knows Bellinger really wants to come back. You know, everybody wants him back here, but at the same time, I'm sure he's not going to go for any $200 million plus deal. So, yeah, as long as Chapman is still on the market, I think that's his play. You know what I mean? And at the same time, yeah.
It's funny, though, because they're both Boris clients.
Yeah, that's
so how that's it's kind of hard to, like, have the stare down with Scott when you're talking about two of his clients. You know, if I can't get Cody, I'm just going to have to get the guy over here on the other side of your table. That'll show you. I have to overpay the guy who's not as good if I don't pay the guy who's better that I really want. But it'll be fine.
I mean, but we both know, we'd love to have Cody back, but we both know that he does have a pretty low floor. You know what I mean? Like there could be some problems with him. I'm hoping he's past that and he's going to be, you know, he's going to be the player that we mostly saw last year. But yeah, signing him to a long, you know, big deal would give me anxiety if that was my job, you know. How do you feel about it?
Wait, so you're saying that a guy who had two of the worst seasons in baseball history could possibly do that again?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a possibility. I tried to comfort myself with I went and looked at his – I went to Baseball Savant, looked at his numbers.
Did you watch the film?
Yeah, I did.
Did you watch the All-22?
Like Adam Hogue. One of my favorite things Hogue does on the podcast with Adam Johnson is he'll talk with straight face about grading the players himself off the tape. I'm like, Adam, number one, why are you doing that? Number two, it's worthless, right? Like, you're grading them on what you think their assignment was. You don't know exactly what they were supposed to do. So you might give a guy credit for doing something great when he blocked the wrong guy, and you might you might grade a guy down when he wasn't even supposed to block that guy. Anyway, yeah, I broke down the tape of Cody frame by frame. So one of the things that we had talked about it on a podcast, that there's kind of league-wide concern that even though Cody had a really productive season, he did not hit the ball very hard, and he did not hit the ball in the air. He hit the ball in the air, but his exit, his launch angle is low for a purported power hitter. So I went back and I looked, and if you compared it to the two seasons, his last 2 years with the Dodgers where he was so bad, he had hit the ball harder and he had hit the ball in the air more often in those two really unproductive seasons. I thought, oh, that's not a good sign. But if you went back to his MVP season, it was more in line with what he did last year. Now he does not have elite. He won a Rookie of the Year and a MVP with an average like exit velocity of 90.
Really? Wow.
And it's funny because in the same column I wrote about Matt Chapman, who they're the exact opposite from last year. Chapman, his Baseball Savant numbers, you know, red is good. It's bleeding off the page. Everything is red. High exit velocity, high launch angle, high contact rate, terrible actual production. 17 homers, 50 RBIs, hit like 230 with, you know. Cody, everything's blue, like, but he hit 307 with like a 360 on base and a 500. It's like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that Cody over his career his exit velocity last year, it was down. It was like 88, but it's only down from like 90.5 in his best seasons, or his exit velocity. His launch angle was like 17.9 in his MVP season. It's like 19. So I was like, you know, that's not, I feel better about this now. Like, he's been super productive with similar numbers. And in fact, it kind of looked like in the 2 years he struggled, he was overcompensating. He was trying to hit the ball harder. He was trying to hit the ball in the air more and wasn't succeeding at it. And he kind of got back to more of what he'd had. And then another thing I wondered about that I really couldn't measure was, is his exit velocity down a little bit because he adopted such a drastic two-strike approach last year? You know, no leg kick, try to hit the ball the other way, just don't strike out. He cut his strikeouts way down. And I just decided with no evidence that yes, that's what it was. And so I wrote up a contract offer and I sent it to Boris on behalf of the Cubs.
So get this thing moving.
Yeah. 6 years, $150 million, $25 million a year. It's only $4 million more than they're paying the right fielder and the left fielder. He's younger. He's better. And I expect we'll see Cody in a couple of days in camp holding the contract and showing it to Jed and just like, I didn't offer you that. It's like, no, but it's this other asshole did, and I signed it. So I'm yours.
He'd be like, oh, you have to sit here.
Who did that? Dolan did that? Fine, I guess we'll have to honor it.
Yeah, I could. I'm going to say they're going to probably meet like around 185. Maybe, you know, with some heavy incentives.
Yeah, and I feel like it'll have a couple. Yeah, I feel like it'll have at least one, maybe two option years on the end, so that then the total is over $200 million.
Correct. Yeah, even though the Cubs
have no intention of ever actually paying him that, when Boris goes out, he's like, "Well, we got him. He's a $200 million player. We got him $200 million."
Right.
And I've kind of lulled myself into this false sense of, well, of course, they're just going to, they'll do it eventually. And then I'm going to wake up someday and he's going to have signed with the Phillies. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be like, oh, yeah. God, they're fucked.
Yeah. And then you're going to have to deal with that channel. Which I really liked him in Oakland. So, you know, I thought he was, he thought he was terrible last year, but, you know, I heard he was banged up and who knows, maybe he just, you had one really bad year, but yeah, regardless, I think, I think it'll be Bellinger, but at the same time, time is running out, like you said.
I mean, you think Chapman's going to be happy being Nick Madrigal's backup, though?
Oh, boy.
Matt, sit this one out. Little Nick's going to play today. He played yesterday, too. Yeah, he'll probably play tomorrow. Look at him. He's gritty. He's a gutty little guy. I know he's a terrible base runner, and he has to run halfway to first to throw the ball over there, and he's walked six times a season, but we're just going to go with him because he reminds me of me. That's one of my hopes, is that my I feel like there were certain guys I was more like, oh God, I hope they don't. There were Cubs I was actually rooting against in situations where it wasn't really going to hurt the Cubs. Like, if the Cubs were up by five runs, I didn't want to see Madrigal get a hit. Like, just strike out or ground out to second, because I don't want Ross to have an excuse to play you again tomorrow. I feel like I won't have to worry about that now with a real manager. Like, counsel will understand, like, okay, that didn't mean anything. Or, well, that's great. That'll help his confidence when he comes off the bench, you know. But when, that doesn't mean I'm going to start him tomorrow. Because I did worry about that.
Totally. Yeah, he's just so gullible that way. And it's just like, my gosh, it just reminded me how much better I feel about this season just with Council alone. I mean, because, yeah, the lineups are going to be legit. I mean, if he bats Ian Happ, you know, third and on opening day, then I'm going to, you know, have a problem with that. But other than that, I have a lot of faith that he'll mix it up and he'll play the way, you know, right people.
Yeah, I mean, the hope would be that if Happ is batting third, it's because he's hitting like a third hitter. He earned that spot because that's what he didn't do last year. Ross would talk about, well, he likes to hit third. He wants to be a third hitter. Well, then he should hit like it, or you shouldn't bat him there because it's not helping anybody. But he would just keep putting him there. Remember he had him lead off for like 3 days, and then that was it. It worked.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, back to third. Like, what? What are we doing?
Yeah. He was like, here's your leadoff, assholes. And then he was done with that.
Do you think that the Jed, though, is like, well, I mean, we'd love to have Cody back, but, you know, I mean, we got Michael Bush and we got Pete Crow Armstrong, and I don't know where we could play Cody. There's no place for him. Because I'm sure there are fans who are like that. Well, can we give him 6 years? We got our first baseman in our center field. Where is he going to play?
No, there you're wrong. Everybody on Cubs Twitter wants Cody back. Risks and all.
That is true. And I agree with them. Every player wants him back. That's every player, not every, but unsolicited at the Cub convention, they were all talking about how they needed to get Cody back.
Yeah.
Dansby basically, I'm sure as he didn't show up on Saturday with a, you know, re-signed Cody t-shirt, he was basically demanding it, which he should. He was their best player last year.
Oh, yeah. No question. He was really good last year. Why do you think he's still on the market? Do you think Boris is just asking for too much? Because we all thought that somebody was going to come along and give him too much money, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, I think the thing that worked in the Cubs' favor, I think the Yankees would have given him too much money, but they traded for Juan Soto.
Yeah, that really helped.
And they're like, okay, we're good. We don't need to do that. And then they had he apparently really wants to. This seems like a small thing, but it becomes a bigger thing. He wants to play for a team that trains in Arizona because that's where he lives in the offseason. He loved it last year. Obviously, the Dodgers did. But last year with the Cubs, as soon as he signed with them, he was able to start working out at the facility the whole winter. And he still wants to do that. Well, the Yankees obviously don't, but there's, you know, I'm sure he'd make an exception for them. A, they're the Yankees. B, that's where his dad played. He, like, grew up in the Yankee clubhouse. Mm-hmm. So the Yankees were a serious threat as long as the money was close. You know, the Cubs were really going to have to pony up. I think the Cubs were going to have to outbid the Yankees if the Yankees got in it. now I think the Cubs are of the feeling that as long as they're close, they're going to get him, which is a dangerous stance to take when he's such a huge part of your team from the year before. The other teams that seem to make sense don't seem to be spending. Like, the Mariners on paper made sense. The Giants still do. I think the Giants, I think, would pay him. But that's a terrible park for him. Like, his revamped, actually getting back to his old swing where he's got kind of the, he still pulls the ball a lot, but when he does go the other way, he really goes to the power alley in left center, which at Wrigley is a great place for a left-handed hitter to hit the ball. And Pack, Bell, Oracle, whatever it's called now, that's an out every time. So I do think, I think that just the number of teams willing to go that many years is so small that, you know, if I'm Boris, I'm probably waiting for spring training now to start, and maybe some really good team, somebody falls down and goes boom in early in spring training, and they're like, oh shit, we need a bat, and then they come calling for Cody. And I don't know. We don't know if the Cubs have made an, you know, they've actually made a real offer. And we also don't know if there's, like, Boris has told him, if you'll do this, he'll sign. And Jed just hasn't picked up the phone, not willing to pay whatever that is yet, hoping that it'll come down. And we really, don't know if it's, if there's, like, 6 years, 180, and the deal's done. All Jed has to do is call and tell Scott, yes, we'll do it, and it's over. Or if they've ever gotten to that part, where they're still going to have to sit down and, like, figure it out. I don't know. I mean, if they don't sign him now, you're looking at Mike Tauchman playing center field on opening day, probably, with Pete at least doing a little apprenticeship in Des Moines.
Yeah, the Giants, who did they sign for center field? I forgot his name.
His last name is Lee. He's the grandson of the Wind. His dad was a superstar in Korea whose name was Son of the Wind. And so he's grandson of the Wind.
Yeah. The last thought I did with Sahada Sharma, we talked about that because the Cubs had, you know, made a run at him, and it was, you know, surprising, but at the same time, I felt like if they would have landed him, they probably would be out on Bellinger.
Yeah.
You know, that would have taken them out on him too.
And that really seemed like such a weird, like, you'd have to pay him. I think he got 6 years from the Giants, at least five. Yeah. And he's Pete. Well, you don't need two of those. I mean, signing him have been a clue that they looked at, you know, everybody downplayed the, you know, the 19 hitless at bats at the end of the season. Went, yeah, big deal. I mean, Ross jacked him around with his playing time and had him trying to bunt half the time, and let's not worry about any of that. I mean, it's one thing if he signed Cody, you can't. That's the great thing about Cody is that he doesn't have to block anybody. He comes in, he's your center fielder. When Pete's ready, he's your first baseman. If Michael Bush is so somehow wonderful, you know, you can use the DH and you could find ways to get everybody at bats. But if you signed a guy like Jung Lee, who's going to be his only value is to be a defense first, fast, hit the ball on the ground center fielder. You know, you can't. You're going to play with him and Pete? It doesn't make any sense, especially since you've got your right and left fielder are both signed for the next 3 years. So, yeah, I believe they were in on it. It was kind of an odd thing, unless their goal was, knowing how much the Giants wanted him, was to get in there and make the Giants pay up so the Giants would have less ammo to go after Cody.
Yeah, it's possible.
But I don't know if Jed plays that kind of 4D chess. Or, I mean, Carter would be sitting there eating the pieces. So I don't know if that would work. And it's also funny how many people are just like, they looked at Michael Bush's, like, prospect ranking and like, okay, we're set. Well, that's fixed. It's like, well, I mean, yeah, it would be nice if he can hit. But his numbers last year were very nervous. His numbers at Reno were almost the same as Matt's at Iowa, and his numbers with the Dodgers were almost identical to Matt's with the Cubs. Scouts have him as a much better player than Matt.
Yeah. And I did, you know, the difference I would say that I like more is that his strikeouts come via, you know, being overly patient, where Mervis was just not making contact.
Yeah, not being able to hit a fastball. That was Mervis's problem.
Yeah. Mervis, yeah, your eyes could tell you that he was overmatched.
Yeah, he's late on fastballs, so then when he thought he was getting a fastball, he had to start early, which meant if it was a breaking pitch, he couldn't react to it, and he was screwed. He was basically having to decide to swing before the pitch, and you can't hit in the big leagues if you have to commit one way or the other. You're always in between, and you're screwed.
Well, I did like the deal anyway, just because I've always said, like, you know, if you've got a surplus of some, you know, level of prospects, you know, and pitching apparently is a good thing for the Cubs right now, and you needed a young hitter, I always said, hey, why can't you just make that kind of trade? Yeah. Like, you remember, like, when the Cubs had all the shortstops and the Mets had all the pitching, and everybody was always waiting for the Mets and Cubs to come together on a trade. That would have been great.
There was always the Javi Baez for Jacob DeGrom rumor. The thing popped its head up a million times, and it would have been great and terrible for both teams. As when DeGrom was good, he was great, and he's hurt all the time. And when Javi is good, he's really good, and then he's not. And of course, the Mets got their dose of Javi anyway.
Yeah,
and he actually played really well for them. He got off to a bad start. Then they did that weird thing where they were like booing the crowd. I forget what they were doing. They were making fun of the Mets fans for being mean to them. They got caught. They apologized, and then Javi went nuts for the rest of the season. That's how he got his big contract with the Tigers.
Miss Javi. Miss good Javi.
I'd bring him back. I'd let him play. I'd let Javi play third for me. I'd make the Tigers eat a little money, but I'd take him back in a second.
For sure. I wouldn't be surprised if he would at least be, you know, rejuvenated a little bit to come back there.
Yeah, it's... That seems like a terrible park for him.
Yeah.
It's big in all the wrong places, and it's not like he's going to cut down his swing and take advantage of the space out there. He's just going to try to hit it harder. I can get over that wall. Well, maybe don't try every time. But that's not Javi. Javi loves to swing from his ass and see what happens. And I wonder... I mean, realistically, if they don't sign Bellinger, then, I mean, they could pivot to Matt Chapman to be shorter. But then you could block the great Matt Shaw, who nobody's actually seen play, but we can't block Matt Shaw.
Again, I'm not worried about that because, like you said, if Bush can hit and Shaw can hit and Chapman's there, they'll find that for him. You know what I mean? They've got the DH, it would work itself out.
I really thought they'd bring. I thought they would bring Jamer back, and he didn't sign for that much.
No, and he signed quickly too. Yeah. So apparently, the Cubs did not have any interest in him.
No,
but they did. If the season opens tomorrow, Madrigal probably is the opening day for Houston.
I mean, if it started tomorrow, it would really surprise everybody. But I would guess Pete goes to Iowa. At least for a few weeks to get some at-bats. Talkman plays center. Bush is playing first with... There's probably... Wisdom's getting way too many at-bats because he's playing some at first with Bush and he's playing some at third with Madrigal.
Yeah.
This is not good. And then you already know... I mean, you're going to get... Hopefully you get more offense out of Miguel Amaya because you're going to get less out of Yan Gomes. I mean, you just are. He's... 50.
I'd love to see Amaya come in and just take that job.
I mean, that ideally it flips, right? Jan plays the same amount of games Miguel played last year, and Miguel plays the number of games that Jan did. Jan's a really good guy to have around, but
absolutely
it's not a great sign if midseason he's still the primary catcher.
Agreed. He did wonders for the staff. I mean, you look at the difference between him and Wilson. My goodness, you know, that was like very obvious.
You know what I missed, though? I mean, I missed, how come Yanda, could he do this a couple times a game? In a big, like a big two-strike pitch, just jump out of your stance and fake a throw so the ump can't see the pitch. I really missed that. That's the Wilson special.
Yeah. Memories.
Yeah. It's still, though, the way they completely mishandled Wilson is unbelievable. Like, they had no intention of bringing him back, and they had two trade deadlines to trade him. Didn't trade him in either one. Just genius.
I'll just never understand all the trades they did not make.
No.
I was banging the drum. I was a really early adopter on trading Wilson Contreras. I got the receipts.
Well, I mean, once you hired a manager who didn't like him, you might as well move on. I mean, you'll never convince me that a lot of it wasn't the fact that Wilson showed up in 2016 and took a bunch of Ross's at bats. You know, I think Ross always thought, oh, this, you know, this crazy asshole. I don't like him.
I don't think John Lackey liked him either.
Yeah, that's, if Lackey doesn't like you, you're doing something right, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, Seiya was so good the last 2 months.
Yes.
That hopefully that's Seiya now.
Yeah, and I will be the first to say I was very hard on Seiya in the first half of the year, and I was his biggest fan, and you know, when he was playing the way he did, because that's the guy you paid.
Yeah.
You know, that's the guy. That's what we were supposed to get.
Well, I forget who said it at the Cub convention, though, but it was one of the players who said Seiya's our most talented player. And I'm sure they're right. I mean, you know, he's a really good baseball player. So hopefully we get, you know, get to see that for a full season. Last year, you know, didn't he pull his oblique in batting practice before the first spring game?
Yeah, and I think the concern at the time was everybody was saying like how jacked he looked, and they were like, he overdid it.
That really hurt the Cubs because it cost him his spot on the World Baseball. He didn't play on the Japanese team at the World Baseball Classic, where he would have just wooed Shohei for a month. Shohei would have turned down the Dodgers offer and said, I'm going to play for the Cubs. Well, maybe not. That probably wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
We have Ian Happ doing everything kind of good, but nothing really well in left field. So that's fun. Still have that. And they got Nico and Dansby. So you have the shell. It's funny. They have like they have just enough players. Like, these guys are kind of good. But then they have these glaring holes in the lineup that are like, that's just enough to keep from winning. I don't know if you saw the Pecota projections came out today.
Yeah, I did.
And the Cubs are projected to win 80 and a half games. And it does feel right. I thought maybe even given the current the lack of obviously they're 80 and a half because they don't have Cody. He's not projected in there, but it's not a 500 team right now. The other guy I worry about Justin Steele just because that's such a huge increase in innings from 1 year to the next. Like even if he doesn't get hurt, you do expect that this is the season that he probably backslides a little bit. And then hopefully in 25, you know, he's back closer to what he was, but it wouldn't surprise me. James Tyon showed up in average shape, which is far better than what we saw last year. So that's a good sign. And then they have everybody's favorite new Cub, Shota. It's funny. When they signed him, I was very underwhelmed by it, right? Like, the step down from Yamamoto to Shota is significant. Like, he was the second best Japanese pitcher. Yeah, but, I mean, there's a big difference between the two. And he's got some weird stuff. Like, he doesn't throw hard, and he's short, and he pitches up, which is some teams were, like, really scared about that. And I was worried about all that stuff, and then he shows up for his press conference, and he memorized, like, lines 3 through 5 of Go Cubs Go in English, phonetically. And at the end of it, I'm like, I love this guy. And he's my new favorite Cub. So he pandered directly to me, and it worked. So I would kill for Shota Imanaga. So no one.
Are you saying he's? Are you saying he's like Japanese Greg Hibbert?
We can only hope. Somebody tweeted at me. I was very good news that one of my other favorite Cubs of all time, Rodrigo Lopez, is making a comeback.
Ooh.
Do you remember Rodrigo Lopez? Good old number 59.
I guess I do.
Here's why I liked Rodrigo. He copied Greg Maddux's windup and stretch exactly. And it really did look like him until the ball left his hand. Like, he was like, look, it's Greg. Oh, no, why? I don't remember Greg giving up 560-foot home runs. We called him Mexi Greggy. And he's back.
Will Clark.
He's got to be 40. Yeah. Yeah, well, he faced Mexican Will Clark and gave up a grand slam in a big game. But he's coming out of retirement. So I'd like to see the Cubs get in on that.
Yeah.
Did you hear the terrible news today about who they lost? They had to make a trade.
Oh, yeah.
They traded the great Michael Rucker. Oh, that's terrible. When they signed Hector Neris and people were trying to figure out who they were going to have to drop off the 40-man, my only wish was one of the two mediocre middle relievers with the wispy mustaches go. It was either Mark Leiter Jr. or Michael Rucker. It was Michael Rucker. I kind of thought they'd waive Mark Leiter Jr. just because teams are so – he's on the waiver wire so much that I don't think teams even notice it anymore. Almost like they think his name is just, like, burned into the screen. And they're like, wait, is he actually on the waiver wire, or is that just from it always being in the same spot? And they just don't claim him. And then the Cubs get to keep him. But I don't think that's how that works.
He was pretty good last year against lefties, so I can see value in
him. He was. And I could see why since they don't seem to ever want to actually get a lefty, I could see why they keep him.
I do love the Hector Neris signing. Big Neris fan. I think they're like one more legit arm away from having a pretty damn good bullpen. Like, if they did make that trade for Clase, like they were talking about, they'd have a pretty good bullpen with him and Albert and Neris. That's solid.
I still think what the hell good is Carter Hawkins if we can't use him and his to schmooze the guys in Cleveland.
Exactly.
And so here's the thing. I was getting to this, and I distracted myself. If you don't sign Cody and you decide you don't want, like, Chapman's not really going to fill it, then you're going to have to make a trade. And I'm honestly surprised there haven't been more trades this offseason. I thought that because there's those 10 teams that rely on their money from Sinclair, you know, the Diamond Sports Group or whatever. And they're very uncertain about how much money they're going to get. The Guardians are one of those teams. And the Guardians are cheap anyway, owned by a cheap family with my last name. And, you know, they don't know. Even, I guess, Amazon has put $165 million in, and everybody's like, oh, that's great. It's, except Diamond Sports Group has to pay out, like, almost $1 billion to these teams. So it helps, but that's not enough. And I get the feeling that as we get closer to the first actual payday, that some of these teams are going to we're going to have to move some money. And there might be some pretty good players that are available that you wouldn't think would be available. And this is why I want Carter, the former Guardians assistant GM, to figure out how the Cubs can get Emmanuel Clase and Jose Ramirez. That's all I want. Just those two guys.
Yeah, I'd be really happy with Bo Naylor too.
With Bo or with, you mean, that's catcher, right?
Wait, yeah, Josh. Is it
Josh? And
Josh
Bo?
Naylor. Sorry.
No, that's right. They both. I mean, the brothers playing on the same team. Yeah, I think Josh.
No, Naylor was the guy that they were talking about, you know, trading for. I was saying earlier in the season, earlier in the offseason, that's the trade you make. You know, I'd rather do that necessarily than, you know, go spend big money in free agency. But they, you know, they obviously still are waiting out the Bellinger thing. But otherwise, Naylor would be, I think that'd be a really nice trade. Yeah, I think Zahanov and I were talking about that. Or even if they were to trade for, you know, Alcantara from the Marlins. Not Alcantara, I'm sorry, I'm having a moment here. Was the pitcher that was on the market?
Well, the Marlins have about Trevor. How about Trevor Rogers?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because is Sandy Alcantara, he's hurt, right?
Yeah, no, that's not the guy I was thinking of. It's Luzardo. I've been way too obsessed with Bears Twitter lately that I've forgotten all my baseball players' names.
Yeah, I my franchise in MLB The Show, Jesus Luzardo, has been in the rotation for the Portland Beavers back-to-back World Series championships. So I'm a fan. I also had a Cub Dynasty one year, or franchise one last year, that where Josh Naylor hit 3 home runs in a playoff game. So,
see,
the Cubs should call me to give for scouting advice. So I tell them.
I was talking, yeah.
All
those
you have
those
to
guys
do, Jed, just adjust the sliders, and it'll work fine. Yeah, and then there was some Cardinal fan who purports to be an insider said that a couple of days ago that the Cubs and Marlins were heavily into trade talks.
Yeah, I saw that.
Somehow the Cubs will end up with Juan Pierre, I think.
Yeah.
That was not a good time. But yeah, so we'll, you know, they don't play a real game for a month. No, 2 months, almost 2 months. So it is funny. We're all very impatient. We're all yelling at Jed. But there's a lot of teams that are just sitting and waiting. Everybody's kind of trying to wait out the market, I think. And at some point, and everybody's like, okay, when Shohei signs, that'll open things up. And it didn't. And then when Yamamoto signs, that'll the log jam, because that didn't work. You know, it's.
Yeah.
And so Jed at the Cub convention, and then Farhan Zaidi at the Farhan Zaidi at whatever the Giants version of Cub convention is. Both of them said that they wished baseball had a signing period in the offseason, a deadline. And
yeah.
Jed used the Shota signing. He said the reason he signed when he signed is there was a deadline. He had to sign by that Friday, and he signed with us on Thursday or whatever that was. And that all sounds great, but what happens after the deadline? I mean, what do you do with real free agents if you set this deadline in the middle of the offseason and they haven't signed? I don't get it. I don't know what you would do. I don't know how you could set a deadline in a baseball offseason. So, I agree. We would get a flurry of activity. But then I don't know what the consequences are if, say, they say you got to sign by New Year's Day, and then on January 2nd you're not on a team. And what, do you got to go? You got to go play in the Mexican League for a year? I don't think that doesn't seem to be fair. So I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem that long ago, like when we were kids, that all the deals were done at the winter meetings.
Yeah,
and it was done. You know, you had a few guys that would like hang on and get, you know, deals right before spring training that weren't very good, but all the good players were, they were wrapped up.
I mean, the good old days for the owners with the reserve clause, guys were just, you could just make them come back. Say, nope, the Cubs would tell Cody, nope, you're still a Cub. You got to come back. You didn't sign with anybody else, you're ours. And, yeah, that's probably what Jed was pushing for. Yeah, that would work. No, I don't think that would work. Sorry. But we're going to have plenty of time to kick the Cubs around. The other big story that I'm already tired of, And we're only going to get more tired of it just because this is one with a deadline, but the deadline is a long ways off. The Bears have the number one pick in the draft. The draft is like April 26th or whatever. And they have until that, well, yes, they have until then basically to decide what are they going to do. Are they going to use the number one pick on, say, Caleb Williams from USC? Are they going to trade that number one pick and stick with Justin Fields? Are they going to trade that number one pick and draft a different quarterback and still trade Justin Fields? I thought it was enlightening. They had the Senior Bowl was last week. And so, like, the Athletic sent a bunch of people down, other people went down. And when Chicago writers talk to scouts and writers from other cities, they all seem to think it's a pretty easy decision for the Bears. All of them are like, no, you would trade Justin Fields and you would draft Caleb Williams. And but up here, it's a much more heated argument. So I want to get your opinion. I'll tell you what I think is why I think Bear fans are having such a hard time with this. And that is, every other Bear quarterback we've ever had, it's been very clear that they suck and they need to go away. And so we have a guy right now who it's not as clear, and we just want to like cling to him like a life raft and keep him forever. So I don't know. Do you think similarly to that?
I do. I've been trying to figure that out. I think it's partly that. And he is a likable guy. He's a likable player. Plus, I think there's a little bit of, you know, the younger fans really gravitate towards the athleticism. And sometimes, you know, when you talk about talent, you think that's really what it boils down to. But, you know, the quarterback position is a lot more than that. You know, if a guy is good, like on Xbox, you know, like there's a lot of young fans that think that that's how you win at that position. But, you know, it's a lot less sexy sometimes. And if you watch Justin, especially, you know, going back to when they drafted him, like I knew what his warts were. And we all, you know, if you paid attention, you heard what they were. And I wasn't like completely gung ho about it, but I was like, hey, at the time when they couldn't trade for Russell Wilson, I was just excited that they were trying to do something to fix the position.
Yeah.
You know, and he had a lot of upside. So I figured, yeah, maybe they could, you know, work out some of his kinks. But, you know, 3 years later, some of it's gotten better, but it's still there. You know, he still doesn't throw, you know, he doesn't use the middle of the field. For as athletic as he is and how gifted he is, he's very clunky, you know, when he's with his mechanics. And his release is still really slow. And it's just when you flip it around and you look at Caleb on tape, and, you know, of course, like everybody else with more than 500 followers, I've watched, you know, all 22s and all that stuff. But no, all kidding aside, like, you know, I've watched a lot of breakdowns and I've watched a lot of his games. You see it, you know, you see he can do some of the athleticism stuff that Justin can do too, but you see how he works in the middle of the field. You see how he fights to stay in the pocket. He just has better instincts. He's got a quick release. He's like quick twitch, you know, when you think about that, like when you used to watch like Hobby was, you know, a quick twitch player. That's what Caleb is. It's a lot of instinct and it's a lot of quick twitch. And it's really different than when you're watching Justin in that regard. And I hear a lot of people say like, oh, they have similar makeups and similar problems, but that's not really true. You know, yes, he holds the ball too long, and fumbles the ball, but that a lot of that comes from him trying to do too much and play hero ball at times. You know, USC was not very good last year, so yeah. I think he tried to, you know, do too much. But yeah, getting back to what you were saying, yeah, Jay Cutler really, I think, spooked the hell out of a lot of people. Well, to the point where it's like, okay, we're done trying to pin our hopes on a quarterback that looks like he could be that great. You know, they'd rather have the lower floor, and or the higher floor rather. So, yeah, Cutler, you know, he just completely looked the part, and I've never been more excited than the day that they traded for him. But yeah, I mean, you have to take another swing. And there are just so many reasons why I think Poles is going to draft Caleb. And we can get into the whole, you know, Washington thing. But at the end of the day, I think he's, you know, he's holding all the cards. And unless he's playing it really, you know, if he, unless he's got really something up his sleeve, I think that that's the way it's going to go.
Yeah, I, you know, it's funny. I really like Justin. And during our weekly Bear podcast, we talk about it a lot, about how some of the stuff he does is so cool. You know, it just looks cool. Like, and so I think you're all, you, when you see him do something positive, you're like, oh, there it is. Now he just needs to do that over and over and over again. And it's true. If he did, he would be a very good player. And it's really hard to do that. And I was kind of teetering on the fence until the second Packer game. As to, well, I mean, you've already got 3 years invested in him, and, you know, he had played well against, like, against Atlanta, and he played okay against Arizona. And you think, all right, well, he played much better after his injury than he did before his injury. And you say, okay, well, this is progress, right? But the Packer game, it's not so much – this was not production based. Basically, just watching the game, you watch the speed at which Jordan Love played the game at, and the speed at which Justin played the game at, and it's like they're playing a different sport.
That's what I'm talking about.
For Justin is most likely the fastest quarterback in the NFL. I mean, he's, but that's all. It's the only thing he does fast is run. You know, he drops back slow. His motion is slow. Everything is very deliberate, and you're right. They talked about after the season was over about why do the Bears ever run slants? And the answer was Justin wouldn't throw them, so they didn't run them. And they would try to compensate for that with all those ridiculous wide receiver screens. And then the problem, because they needed some plays that it was just like three steps and throw it. You have one read, throw it. And in most offenses, that's a slant. It's, you get, you know, but Justin didn't like to throw those. And so but if you run wide receiver screens and you don't run slants, the linebackers could cheat, or the nickelback could cheat to the screen because they know you can leave the middle of the field open. And it's just little stuff like that. Yeah. It was funny when Luke Getsy first started getting interviews after the season, I was of the impression it was the same reason that the Bears brought in what's his name? Am I blanking?
Yeah, Cliff Kingsbury.
Yes, Cliff Kingsbury. I was going to call him Kurt Kingsbury. Cliff. You can't convince me that the 2 hours they spent with Cliff weren't just 2 hours of them asking him questions about Caleb Williams. And I think a lot of the teams who brought Luke in, it was 2 hours of them asking him questions about Justin Fields. So they could decide as they try to figure out if they're going to try to trade for him or not. And then Luke gets a job, which cracked me up. The Raiders are like, that's the guy we want. We want that guy. Which is funny because the Raiders seemed like a prime, if the Bears are going to trade Justin, the Raiders seemed like one of those teams that might be interested.
Yeah. Right.
And even if Luke and Justin have a good relationship, neither one of those guys should want that, right? Like, if you're going to get a fresh start, you want a fresh start. If Justin's going to go play for another team, he doesn't want Luke Getsy. And if Luke is going to get a second chance as offensive coordinator, he doesn't want Justin Fields. It's like, I want things to be different. So I want to really know I failed. It's not I just got hooked up with this guy again and we both, you know, we wrestled each other and we drowned.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it was out there very much, but I did see a report from a Vegas beat writer today talking about Getsy basically throwing Eberflus under the bus in the scenario instead of Justin. He was saying, look, I knew that I didn't put Justin in the best position at all times, but we were trying to force him to grow, and that was by, you know, the command of Eberflus. Like, Eberflus said, no, we need to get him, you know, to improve in the passing game. Yeah. And basically, yeah, Getsy was more or less saying, I would have been able to curtail my offense better on Justin if that's what we wanted to do. But even Fliss gave me my marching orders. So he kind of threw Eberflus under the bus more so than Fields. Or at least publicly, that's what came out. Yeah.
So if Eberflus really did that,
yeah,
this is what I will say about it. I agree with Matt Eberflus 100%. Because you had to find out what you had.
Right. You have to. Right.
You can't limp along. This was this whole idea. This is so very Bears, right? Well, we could probably win 7 or 8 games if we just, well, I guess they didn't win 7 games. We could win 8 or 9 games if we just run the ball 45 times. It's like, are you trying to win a Super Bowl eventually or not? Because if you are, right, you can't win one that way. You've got to find out what you have. And if the evaluation this third year for Justin was, can he run the kind of offense we're going to need him to run so we can go win a Super Bowl? He had to throw the ball. And people were mad at the beginning of the season because they cut out a lot of the quarterback runs and stuff. And I remember thinking going into the season that if I were in charge, I would do that too for a couple of reasons. Number one, he's got to prove he could pass. But number two, you're going to kill him.
Right.
You know, this whole idea that you could just, well, why don't they just run Justin like 20 times a game? It's like, because you're going to have him for 9 games a season then, and he's going to be in traction for the other 8. You can't play that position that way. You can't. If he could, then yeah, he probably would be really good, but it's not how it works.
You hit the nail on the head with the whole Jordan Love, you know, and the last Green Bay game. That was it for a lot of people. Yeah. You know, that was, I mean, it just was, yeah. I was saying,
it's funny. I was saying running, to my wife, they were running similar offenses. You know, even Getsy did have to, you know, it wasn't until the bye in his first year, right before that Patriots game, that they put a lot of runs in for Justin. They were trying to have him run the Packer offense, and it wasn't going very well. And then they put that in, and they were at least functional after that. But they've been trying to get back to more of the, of that offense, and they're running similar offenses, but they're running it in different ways. And the Packers offensive line was better than the Bears offensive line in that game, but they're still the Bears still were getting pressure on Love. Love was just getting rid of the ball a lot faster and just more decisive. Everything was quicker. He'd see something, he would just throw it instead of, oh, that guy looks like he might be getting open. Let me see. It's like, no, if you have to wait, you know, it's not going to happen. You know, I hope that's the other thing. A thing we argued about a lot about on our Bear podcast was this idea that if the Bears, it was clear they're going to get the number one pick, then this all comes into play. If the Panthers had won 5 or 6 games, the Bears are probably going to stick with Justin Fields, because the reason you can do this is you can. It's easy to foresee you can upgrade this position. You know, Justin is talented enough and has had enough production that he should be starting in the NFL for somebody, right?
Right.
You know, we're Bear fans. We know what bad quarterbacks look like. He's not a bad quarterback. The question is he good enough? And my answer would be no, not for what you really need. So you should move on from them. You have a chance to get Caleb Williams. If you were picking, and maybe you could convince yourself, if you were picking second, that, you know, Drake May is an upgrade over Justin. Once you get away from those guys, and I don't know how Jaden Daniels, how he projects in the NFL. But once you get farther down, then it's like, okay, we can't upgrade. We can't confidently upgrade. You know, you can't sell me on J.J. McCarthy, or I like to call him Michael Penix because it's more fun than Penix, or Bo Nix. You can't convince me that they're ever going to be as good as Justin. So I would stick with Justin. But that's not the situation the Bears find themselves in. They find themselves with that first pick, where you could take a guy who has the traits that Justin lacks. Like, you know, I'm no quarterback expert, but when you watch Caleb Williams play, it is impossible not to be impressed by, he has a ridiculous arm.
Yeah.
Like, he can make throws to every part of the field. He puts the ball right on dudes. He turns and sees a guy and the ball is out of there and it's right where it's supposed to be. And yes, he had, He did not have as good a junior year as he had a sophomore year. A big part of that was that the USC's offensive line was good, not great. His sophomore year, it was bad. His senior year, he had better weapons when he was a sophomore than when he was a junior. But the biggest problem, I think, with the USC last year was their defense was terrible. Mm-hmm. And they went into games thinking they had to score 40 points to win. And they basically felt like they had to score on almost every possession. And it changes the way you play that position to where you take a lot more chances and you try to get bigger chunk plays and you're holding the ball more and things don't look as good. But when you look at his numbers at the end of the year, they're still really good. So you'd have a hard time talking me out of it. To me, people are like, well, you can't guarantee he'll be good. No, we can't. I just think it's worth the shot. I mean, we waited our whole, as Bear fans, we had our whole lives for them to have a chance to get a generational quarterback. Now, getting the chance to get one and getting one are not the same thing, but if you don't take the chance, you're not going to get one.
Right. And I still think his floor is high enough to where even if you were to say that he and Justin would be on a level playing field, you still reset the clock and do this because just because of the upside alone.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, I still feel like Caleb would come in on day one and be better.
I agree. I think if your goal is – if people are like, well, I thought they were going to try to be a playoff team next year. I think they have no worse chance of being a playoff team with Caleb as their quarterback as they do with Justin as a quarterback next year.
Yeah.
So you're not hurting, you're not hurting your chances at all.
Right. And I still think that this situation is good, if not better than what Stroud walked into in Houston.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the, ironically, the Bears, this franchise that is a quarterback graveyard, because this is not their pick. You know, they didn't go 1-16 or 2-15. You know, they have what turned out by the end of the season to be a legitimately good defense. They have one of the best running games in the NFL. They've done a tremendous amount to improve their offensive line. They still need a center, and I think they still could use an upgrade at left tackle, but, you know, Braxton is at least serviceable.
Right.
They have a legitimate number one wide receiver, which they hardly ever have. They have a real NFL tight end. You come in and this is not a typical rookie going to a terrible team where he's just going to get his brains beat in. You actually can, and that's why I know we want to talk about this, about if there are people out there who think Caleb is somehow going to pull some big power move and he's going to maneuver his way to the Commanders. Well, you go to the Commanders, you really are going to go to a team that doesn't have squat. You have Terry McLaurin, and that's about it. And if you want to see how hard it can be for a rookie quarterback, go to Washington and play for them. Don't come play for the Bears, where you actually can have a leg up when you get started.
Right, and then you add into what they're going to have to give the Bears to move up. That's going to, you know, handcuff them a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, and I know there will be guys who are like, well, if the Commanders really want Caleb, why won't you do this? So you swap first round picks with them. You get their second round pick, and then you get next year's number one. And then you either keep Justin, and you take Marvin Harrison at 2.
No.
You can get your center in the second round. Or you take Drake May, and you do this. It's because the reason the Commanders would be willing to give that up is because they want Caleb Williams, which should tell you something. Here's the other thing that's really going to freak out Bear fans. When the Bears go to trade Justin, they're not going to get a lot for him.
You know what? I've been saying that, and I've just been a little worried about it, because at first when it came out that they can get a 2 and a 4, kind of like the Jets got from Darnold, I was like, okay, that makes sense. However, now we're talking about how many teams are really going to be in on him. But Schefter was on with Waddle and Sylvie this afternoon on the drive home. I listened to it. He's saying not only does he almost guarantee they're going to get a second rounder, but he thinks they can still get a future first or even a late first. And I don't see.
That would be great.
I can't imagine.
I can't imagine that market is out there. I guess we'll know. Like, Justin's market will come into focus after free agents, after the first few days of free agency. Because then you'll see, did Kirk Cousins change teams? You know, there's just these kind of good quarterbacks. teams are going to be left without a seat. They're not going to have a quarterback they really like, and they're not going to have a high enough draft pick to take one of the good quarterbacks. And then they're going to be the ones who are like, what about Justin Fields? And you only need one team to talk themselves into it. What would be great is if you have two teams that think he would, and then you can kind of drive that price up.
Right. That's what Schefter said. All you need is at least two teams.
But I mean, I think there's like, it was easy to like draw the line to like Atlanta. He's from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got good weapons. And there were people like, oh, he'd be perfect in Arthur Smith's offense. Well, then they fired Arthur Smith. Arthur's going to Pittsburgh. So they just trade him to Pittsburgh. That doesn't feel like a Pittsburgh trade to me. The Pittsburgh move for me would be Justin goes somewhere else this year, and then the team decides they don't want to pick up that fifth-year option, and then that's when the Steelers go get him for nothing, and then they try to see if they can turn him into their quarterback. The Raiders were a team that was like, there you go, that's perfect. Well, now they got Getsy, and I can't imagine that he's going to want to, like, you know, do it again. Maybe he does. Maybe he's 100% convinced that, you know, that they're going to run some 1970s offense. Justin's going to be perfect, and it's going to be great. I worry that the return is not going to be what people expect. Player trades in the NFL, almost always like, that's all they got. It's almost always the reaction. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that. These teams value their draft picks so much.
Yeah. And you look at this draft, and regardless of how many of these guys we don't know how good or bad they can be, like Bo Nix, someone's going to get antsy and would rather draft a quarterback like that than to have, you know, Justin's fifth-year option staring you in the face once you make that trade.
Yeah, I mean, that's – you have to factor in. He's inexpensive this year. He's 6 point mm-hmm. something. But then he's at least it's at least $22 million in year five. And if you pick up the fifth-year option, you really have decided you're going to stick with him. And now you're going to have to pay. So here's a good – this should put things in context for people. Like Jared Goff, who's a good quarterback, right?
Mm-hmm.
He makes $35 million now. He's in the last guaranteed year – the last year of guaranteed money. So the Lions are going to have to work out a new deal with him. And they're talking about how it's going to cost them $50 million a year for Jared Goff.
Yeah.
So if you think you're going to get Justin for like 20, you're not. I mean, he's not going to get 50, but you're going to have to pay that guy $30 million a year.
For sure.
And so if you're looking at, we think he might be okay. Or, yeah, you're right. You could take a second round pick and you can draft Bo Nix. And you could pay him, you know, $2.4 million and have him for longer. What they do is they'll talk themselves into that. Like, well, let's just do that. Why would we want to take the risk? Let somebody else take the risk on Justin, and but we'll see. I mean, what the hell?
Yeah, but all it takes is one guy to fall in love with them. Yeah. Like you're saying, yeah, yeah, it could happen. But yeah, I don't see the first round pick that Schefter was talking about. But you never know with conditional picks. Who knows? Maybe. But either way, I think he will get traded. Probably right around, like you were saying, the start of free agency. So maybe even at the very, very end of February to the first couple of weeks of March.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, people are going to – I think people on Twitter are starting to accept that he's going to get traded. But, yeah, you never, ever know, but I would be shocked if he's not.
No, because I don't even know.
The Caleb thing – yeah, the Caleb thing, it sounds like a lot of the talk from his camp and a lot of the maneuvering is coming from the dad. That's what Schefter was saying today to do. It was either Schefter or I'm sorry, what's his name? Albert Breer.
Yeah.
He's just saying like, that's just his dad. You know, he's looking out for his kid, but at the same time, he's a little too outspoken. So, but yeah, if the Washington thing comes about, I think Poles will have a decision to make, but I kind of feel like Poles will also stare him down and be like, no, we're drafting him.
Yeah. I mean, right, so there's this thought that because he's from D.C. or the area, and then Cliff Kingsbury was like this weird hybrid, like quarterback consultant for USC last year, and they apparently hit it off, that he's somehow going to force his way to Washington. it doesn't work that way. I mean, the days of even Eli Manning forcing himself to the Giants. I mean, the players don't even have that much leverage anymore. because you need
and
to
that
hurry
was the
up
Manning and, family.
Yeah, and you need to hurry up and get to your second contract. If you're, even if it's the number one overall pick, you're going to make decent money, but you're really going to cash in the second contract. So you're not going to, you can't sit out, which is what the Bears could make him do. I mean, we could have this. Yeah. We could just go all Tyson Bagent all the time next year. That probably won't happen. And one of the things about it, the financial piece, I always hesitate to talk financial stuff with the Bears because people are convinced that they're just cheap. I will remind them that when they signed Khalil Mack, they gave him the biggest contract a defensive player in the NFL had ever had. And then the contract extension to Jay Cutler was recklessly bad. They gave Jay all kinds of money. And it's like, hadn't we decided Jay wasn't that good? No. But they will spend money. And I've talked about it before. And I remember this crap and on the Bear podcast. People used to say the Bears were cheap, and they were right. There was a time when the Bears were this mom and pop. They were making all their money off the team. And cash flow wasn't great. And they did have a hard time, parting with cash. But then it's been 25 years now. Once Fox paid big money for the TV package and the TV money started pouring in, the Bears they're rolling in dough. They'll spend it.
Yeah.
But where money does come into this is that most teams are paying their starting quarterback about $20 million a year and their backup about 10. The Bears, if they have Caleb Williams and Tyson Bagent, will be paying a little over 6 for their quarterback, for their first and second string quarterbacks, meaning that they've got an extra $25 million or so to spend on other positions.
Yep.
And it does factor in them. You're like, but you could get all these draft picks, or you also can, you don't have to trade that pick and get draft picks. You can use your cap money and sign players. There are other ways to round out your roster.
Yes.
They're in a great position.
And I love that whole argument too, where it's like either you draft Caleb or you build a super team around Justin. It's like you can build around Caleb too, because like you said, the rookie contracts can allow him to keep Jalen Johnson and spend a little bit more money in free agency. But at the same time, they've still got the number 9 pick. They can draft a wide receiver, a tight end, an offensive lineman. And you still have a lot of cap space, so they're going to be able to do both. And when you get these picks back, you're not getting them all in one year. They're not going to just draft these players. It's going to be spread out. So it's not, you're not going to like build this, super team everybody keeps thinking they're going to have. And I don't even know how that's working out for, last year Philadelphia was the, the flavor of the year talking about building around Jalen Hurts, but they're looking pretty old and expensive right now.
Yeah. Well, and they were, I think if Brock Purdy doesn't tear his UCL in the championship game, the Eagles don't go to the Super Bowl. And then you can look at the other team that's built the super team, the Niners, and there's a very good chance that that super team is going to go, is in their second Super Bowl in 5 years, are going to get beaten by the team that has the elite quarterback.
Right. And they might, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to replace Purdy if he doesn't have a good Super Bowl.
I mean, the easiest thing in the world to do is to build a team around it's easier to build a good team around a great quarterback if you can somehow get a hold of one than it is to try to cover for a mediocre quarterback. Because at some point in those big games, that guy has to make a series of plays, and he's either able to do it or he's not. And just for once in my life, I would like for the Bears to have the guy who has the legit chance to make those plays instead of.
Yeah, I want to see how that works.
Yeah, and honestly, to me, it's completely worth it, even if it doesn't work. You shoot your shot. You have the number one pick in a draft with a guy who could be a great NFL quarterback. Do it. I mean, if your goal is to win a Super Bowl, you're not going to win one with the guy you got. So I don't see what the risk is.
Yeah, and you look at, guys like, Mahomes is obviously still going to own the league for a while. But then you look at guys like Jordan Love and C.J. Stroud. These guys are just going to start coming on. You need to be able to compete with that.
Yeah, you can't be. Well, we're in a big playoff game, and our strategy is we're going to run for 209 yards. All right, well, we're going. Yeah. We're all going to work on Monday pissed because it's not going to work.
Yep. I'm sorry, but yeah, Jordan Love is right there in our own division. He's going to be a problem. He is really good.
All right. Well, that sounds good. Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate this. I think.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Many of us have herpes.
I don't know. What's up yours?